Welcome to Artworks, the weekly podcast from the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Josephine Reed.
For me, the Bronx, something about the Bronx, is just, it brings fire in me. I mean, if they do a show down in the Bronx or a big competition, it should be in the Bronx. It's where it started from. It's more spiritual.
If you wasn't from the Bronx, man, you was just beginning somewhere else.
We had the most clubs. We had the most musicians. You had to come up to the Bronx. Everybody was coming up to the Bronx.
We weren't looking for a way out of the barrio or out of the Bronx. None of that. For us, it was, to some extent, spiritual.
You just heard an excerpt from the 2006 award-winning film From Mambo to Hip Hop, A Bronx Tale. As fresh as tomorrow's news, this exuberant documentary tells a story about the creative life of the South Bronx. Beginning with the Puerto Rican migration to the neighborhoods in the 1940s and 50s, the adoption of Cuban rhythms by musicians, the creation of the New York salsa sound, and then the rise of hip-hop. All this creative energy happening in the same small neighborhood in the Bronx. Funded in part by the National Endowment for the Arts and aired on PBS stations, the film was directed by Henry Chalfant and was the brainchild of producers Steve Zeitland and Elena Martinez from the organization City Lore. Let me tell you a little about City Lore, because it's important to this conversation. Founded by Zeitland in the mid-1980s, City Lore is the center for New York City's urban folk culture. And if you think urban folk culture is an oxymoron, City Lore is here to tell you different. From the Lower East Side to the barrios of the Bronx, City Lore documents, explores, and presents the rich and diverse cultures created by the different peoples that live in New York City. Folklorist Elena Martinez has been with City Lore since 1997, focusing on material culture, Puerto Rican culture and folklore, and Latin music. But after From Mambo to Hip Hop, music has been taking center stage in her career. She also became the co-artistic director of the Bronx Music Heritage Center and producer of the film We Like It Like That, The Story of Latin Boogaloo, another musical documentary about the Bronx. But while both Mambo and Boogaloo are filled with glorious music, they are not your typical music documentaries. Rather, they explore that music as urban tradition, created and embedded in the Latino community, very specifically, that community in the South Bronx. Both films unpack the music's history and show the significance of it to the people in the neighborhood, as street culture, as urban folklore.
City Lore, I think, has been really in the forefront of just sort of like expanding the boundaries of what we define as folklore. Also, you know, we think of the material arts, you know, we think of like, you know, traditional music and dance. But then City Lore has been able to create programs, whether it's poetry, whether it's dance and music, and it's been able to expand those boundaries and bring together people that we might have not always thought of as traditional artists. But, you know, maybe some of the work they do overlaps with traditional artists. So I think that's been really great at City Lore as well. And I think the documentary we did From Mambo to Hip Hop, it sort of expresses that. Like, you know, we're looking at popular forms of music through like the lens of traditional genres or traditional methodology.
Yeah, well, one of the programs is Place Matters. And one of the things you did through Place Matters was the South Bronx Music Project. And out of this came the documentary, From Mambo to Hip Hop. Walk me through the trajectory of that.
See, yeah, that I think to me just epitomizes that project, what City Lore, you know, has done. And so Place Matters, looking at vernacular architecture, presenting, documenting, doing advocacy work for vernacular architecture and small businesses around New York City. But then we started working with some folks who had done a lot of work with the Latin music scene, and especially in the Bronx. There was this sort of like circuit of great clubs and dance halls that I would say the mainstream didn't know. It's people who grew up in those places knew about them because they were like the hottest dance halls in like the 40s, 50s, and 60s. But, you know, people maybe outside didn't know this circuit and this sort of scene. So we just started interviewing musicians, people who ran the dance halls, the dancers themselves, and just sort of like just collecting a lot of oral histories about from people who were part of this, who grew up in this era, who danced, played music, music store owners, people who are part of this network. And while we were doing that project, you know, it had many components. First, it was just collecting the interviews. And then we do public sector folklore, so we have to do public programs. So we're like, okay, well, let's put some panel discussions to have people talk about these places that they remember as a kid, or the dance forms and the music forms that they practice, and how they maybe how they learn them. And we started doing public programs. We created a map. We created this great map that went along with it that talked about the people and the places all throughout the Bronx and in this part of this one area of the South Bronx. We did a concert because there's this one school in the South Bronx. It's now, I think it's MS-302, but at the time it was PS-52 back in the 50s. And all these amazing musicians, if you're into salsa, all the most amazing musicians as when they were in middle school went to that school.
Eddie Palmieri, jazz master.
Oh my, yes. He went there. Ray Barreto, Joe Quijano, all these guys went there. And so we realized, wow, and people in the neighborhood knew this. So it's not it was one of these things we come upon it and we're like, oh, wow, this discovery. But people knew this in the neighborhood. And there were activists in the neighborhood who actually cleaned up a park across the street, and they created a stage there to present Latin music concerts every summer based on this knowledge that, all these great legends went to this school and were from this, lived in this neighborhood as kids. So we, partnered with the park, the small grassroots groups that ran the stage in the park, and we put on this concert where we asked all the alumni who were around to perform at this concert. So it was an alumni concert, and the only one who didn't make it was Eddie. Actually, he couldn't make it for some reason. But all these other Ray Barreto came, Manuel Kendo, and we filmed it with three cameras. We wanted to make sure this was sort of a historic moment. And after we filmed it, we were like, "Wow, this looks great, and there's a great story here, And the documentation was amazing, and we knew it was a great story. So we're like, "Okay, let's make this into a larger documentary."
Well, From Mambo to Hip Hop is a great documentary, and it's not a typical music documentary. I mean, it certainly has a lot of music in it, but it really is about the social context in which that music was produced, the geographic place where it was produced, and also how the music was shared. I think the film makes clear that these are traditional art forms.
Oh, yes. We're dealing with mambo, people who practice mambo music. This is the same neighborhood where a lot of young kids who were into hip hop at the time lived a generation or so later. So we're looking at hip hop and mambo. And these are not traditional musical forms usually thought of. They're popular forms of music. So what we were looking at is not maybe the forms themselves, not like a mambo that Tito Puente recorded on an album, but the way the young kids, whether it was from the generation in the 50s, if they were into mambo, or the generation of the 70s, who were, the emerging hip-hop culture.
And salsa then.
Yeah, yeah, and that's sort of the middle, that sort of bridge in the middle. Mm-hmm. All those generations, a lot of them learned how to play drums in the street. They learned how to play drums in the park from other musicians or other younger people. The young kids who were part of the hip-hop generation, God, that was such a traditional form of transmission, the transmission of the culture. Young kids are just teaching each other on laying down cardboard in the streets or parks and just teaching each other. There's no schools or anything involved. So we realized that there was this traditional element of what we as folklorists like to look at and document. And we're like, this is the way the communities came together, processed it, transmitted it. This is really interesting, engaging. And so that's what's the angle we took, that those earlier generation, maybe in the Mambo era, they were, a lot of their families were coming over from the islands, from Cuba, Puerto Rico, dealing with migration. And of course, the Bronx later had a lot of economic problems. So the children of the hip hop generation are growing up amid economic hardship, devastation of the landscape in the Bronx. But through all these issues of, discrimination, economic issues, this devastation of the buildings and the landscape of the Bronx and fires, there was always this cultural thread that kept people going and was important to the communities, and which they themselves were keeping going in different ways. And so that to us was the story.
One of the things that I remember vividly when I was growing up in the South Bronx is the sound of drums resonating through the canyons of the projects. The music was so much in full force. The culture was so in your face. There was no way that you could escape it, even if you wanted to. Even if you wanted to.
I think maybe that's what gives it power, I think, for a lot of people, because I hear so many people tell me, God, I just saw that movie And it was I loved it. And then, you know, when you work on something a long time ago, you're like, oh, yeah, that was great. I'm glad we did it. And we won awards for it. And, you know, by the time, but it's been so long. And then when people still come up to me and say, like, that was so moving. And then I think that it must resonate, right? How whatever we're saying about the community has to resonate to people. So, I mean, so that's I'm very proud of.
Yeah, I think you should be. I think it's a fabulous movie and everybody should just stop listening to us now and go watch it. There's so much about that film. The hotbed of creativity, the way that people just need to create, no matter the circumstances, I think was something I certainly came away with in that film.
Yeah, I think these are like those kids who like started hip hop. You're talking about like 15-year-old kids. And actually, even in the Mambo and Salsa era, some of those guys making music were like 16 years old. They didn't have access, you know, these young kids, Grandmaster Flash, all those guys growing up in the Bronx, they didn't have access to music classes because the schools were going bankrupt. You know, they didn't have access to lessons from, you know, formal training and from music teachers, but they were able to cobble together like technology and create scratching and create ways to make new sounds and to create a new dance. And comes from the Bronx, which is like the probably the global symbol of at that time of urban failure, urban blight and everything. But then this culture from there was now worldwide and goes global. So it's just an amazing story.
Well, since Place is so central to folklore, you're from New York, but tell me about your neighborhood and your background and where you came from.
So I'm actually from the Bronx, so that's why when we started doing this South Bronx Latin Music Project, I was like, oh, great, I'm going to get to go back to the Bronx and interview, you know, start interviewing people. And my family, I still have family, you know, in the Bronx, and it was great working on the project with the South Bronx Latin Music Project because some of the earliest musicians I would interview, I interviewed Benny Bonilla, this great timbales player, who was like a sideman for many different bands. Most well known for playing timbales on the P. Rodriguez song "I Like It Like That," which is like, you know, I'm sure the new generation knows it because Cardi B's cover of it. But you know, when I started interviewing him and found out he grew up on Simpson Street where my father grew up on, and you know, he was like he hung out with my uncle, my dad's older brother. So that sort of intersected with, you know, the work that I do with sort of my background and the personal family and stuff. So that was really nice. So being from the Bronx and working on that project for so long, that sort of became like a real emphasis in a lot of my work. When Mambo to Hip Hop came out, the film, the documentary, and we started getting a lot of traction with that. And I started doing tours. Like, I would take people on tours of like the neighborhood to talk about the musical history, and people really loved that. And so a lot of my work just really started being focused in the Bronx. And then I was able to start working with the group Women's Housing and Economic Development Corporation. Their main service is affordable housing. But around affordable housing, they do a lot of other things because sort of the vision, the mission of the organization WEDCO is not just to build, you just don't build buildings for people, you build community. So how do you build community? Not only do you give people a good place to live, but they need schools for their kids, they need places to shop, good food, you know, they need access to good job, and they have all these different things. But one of the branches they wanted to branch out in was in the cultural sector. They wanted to have like a little cultural center. So myself and my partner, who's also, he's a jazz musician, he worked on the film with us from Mambo to Hip Hop, Bobby Sanabria, we were asked to be the artistic directors. Well, first we just asked to start curating some events at this place, this Bronx Music Heritage Center, so which we did that in partnership with City Lore. So from then on, my work had been really focused on just music, a lot of music and music of the Bronx. And through there, we've been working, curating stuff at the Bronx Music Heritage Center, but also we became the artistic directors. And now they're opening, WEDCO opened, just built a third building of their affordable housing complex, and they created a theater in there, and the theater should be open very soon. Just you know, with the pandemic and stuff, some delays, but that should be open soon, so we'll be running that. But I mean, I'm still at City Lore, even though most of my time is in the Bronx. I'm sort of maybe City Lore's Bronx outpost in a way, maybe, because my work is basically there all the time.
I'm curious, do you play music at all? I don't mean professionally, obviously, but you know, as a hobby or anything.
What's really also interesting is that I'm not a musician. And so before all this, I was really more interested in the material culture. But then once the film came out and all my work was like, you know, working with musicians and putting together panels or programs with musicians and or concerts or researching music history, you know, that's sort of probably more what I'm identified right now. So I'm not a musician. I don't read music, but I'm interested in where the buildings where they performed, you know, all those sort of things, the social history of the music. And also the people who were involved in the music scene who, you know, weren't just the musicians themselves, but all the people who support that scene to make it happen.
Will you give me an example of that?
So another great project that's sort of an offshoot of the work with From Mambo to Hip Hop, you know, I was able to interview the record store owner, Miguel Angel Amadeo, Mike Amadeo, who runs this record store, Casa Amadeo, and it's the longest continually run Latin music store in New York City. It was founded in 1941 by this woman entrepreneur from Puerto Rico. She was a sister of a really famous Latin American composer, Rafael Hernandez. But she ran with it. It became very well known with her store. And Mike brought the store from her in 1969. So it's been going continually through then. He's still running it now. And City Lore was also, we were able to get the building where that store is on the National Register of Historic Places. And it's the first Puerto Rican site on the mainland to be nominated to the National Register. So again, that the work has sort of like had these many sort of offshoot and branches.
Aside from the fabulous music that goes straight through From Mambo to Hip Hop, I really, really appreciated the social and historical and cultural context in which you place that music, which was eye-opening. And you did the same thing again in a film you produced in 2015 called Another Music Film. We Like It Like That, The Story of Latin Boogaloo. I want to know what inspired that film, but before you tell us that, explain for people who might not know what Boogaloo is.
Boogaloo is a form of Latin music. You know, we think of the 20th century, all these different forms of Latin music that became popular forms of music. Mambo, of course, there was, you know, mambo craze in the 1950s and cha-cha-cha is part of that. There was a short-lived thing called the pachanga, which usually played with like charanga bands with flutes and stuff in the early 60s. And Boogaloo was this, in the mid to late 60s, was this form of music that came about. You know, it was sort of like a mix of some R&B rhythms with Afro-Cuban rhythms. Sometimes it was sung in English, sometimes it was sung in Spanish. And what's really interesting about it is it's sort of the perfect mix of that generation's music, because the musicians who were making mambo music, like Tito Puente, Tito Rodriguez, Charlie Palmieri, you know, Eddie's older brother in the 50s, you know, they were sort of the kids of immigrants. So, you know, they were singing in Spanish. They were taking those old Afro-Cuban rhythms and making the music to them. But now you have the next generation that's born here in New York. They're not really Puerto Rican. A lot of us identify, you know, ourselves as like New Yorican. You know, if you grow up in New York, and when you grow up in New York, you might be of Puerto Rican descent, but your Spanish might not be as good. You speak Spanglish. You hang out with a lot of African Americans, so you're listening to funk and R&B and the Beatles and everything else. And you know, you're part of New York City as part of your culture as well. And so the New Yoricans were like, they're children of that generation too. So they're not just going to listen to the old. To them, mambo music was my parents' music. No one as a teenager wants to listen to their parents' music, you know, even though mambo is like a hip form of music. But when you're 17, 16, you want to listen to what's hip and new at that time. And Boogaloo was a style of music in the late 60s that sort of like, you know, brought together these sort of like African-American influences with Afro-Cuban rhythms. And again, though, because, you know, you have a generation that not from the island, wasn't born in the island, so Spanish isn't their first language. So there was a mix of languages, English and Spanish.
I made it big because I gave it the Latin beat. You know, child, I'm kind of hard to beat. Just commence your feet to skate. Pick up your arms and make them shake. Baby, if you think you're shy, do me a favor, honey, go someplace and hide.
So it's sort of like the perfect music for that generation. And they were very young. Some of the proponents of that were very, very young. And what happened is that some of the older established musicians realized that they were doing really well. And so like in the film, it talks about why it didn't really last that long as a genre, even though now it's coming back. You have a lot of people coming back because the Boogaloo of that era, these young kids, they weren't formally trained. Like, you know, Tito Puente went to Juilliard and was like, you know, was formally trained. He was a great musician, you know. These younger musicians, you know, they couldn't keep clave. In Latin music, there's a thing called clave, that five beat. And they didn't follow that, you know. It would drive the older musicians insane, you know. But it was fun and people just danced to it. And that was the thing. It was the 1960s. People were having fun. It wasn't like you didn't have to be all formal and dance with a couple in a more complicated mambo dance. You could just go and dance however you wanted to with Boogaloo or, you know, all the music of that era. So it was really fun music. And I think also, you know, speaking of the social history, I think it does talk to that generation that grew up at that time. And also at that time when they were growing up, these New Yorican generation are growing up, it's also this time of like ethnic politics, right? You got the Black Panthers, the Young Lords, American Indian movement. So there's all this political stuff going on. And so I think it speaks to shifting identities and conflicts, you know, generational conflict of that era.
Give me the backstory of the second documentary, We Like It Like That, The Story of Latin Boogaloo. How did that one get started?
What we were really lucky is that Matthew Ramirez Warren, the filmmaker who did that, he had started working on this already, and he liked From Mambo to Hip Hop, but, you know, was really interested in Boogaloo, and he had been working on this, and he did all these great, incredible interviews. And then he, you know, he came to us and see if we would like to be like the conduit. City Lore could be the conduit, which we do for a lot of filmmakers for documentaries. And for us, it was great because for PBS, From Mambo to Hip Hop, we had to keep it to a certain length. So we had to, like, leave a lot out. I mean, we wish we could have made it even longer because there's a few things, you know, a few little elements, things we would have liked to add in there. But Boogaloo, we had to leave out completely. Even so, we kind of just skipped over that music. We went from the Mambo era, talked a little bit about salsa, and then went into, like, hip hop. So to me, when Matthew came forward with We Like It Like That, it was like a bookend. It sort of like bookended From Mambo to Hip Hop. It complemented it.
Well, we were the missing piece.
That was that missing piece, and it was great. And you know, Matthew is a great filmmaker. He did such a great job with that because he had done all these interviews on his own dime, like going to interview people, these musicians in Florida, different places. And then, you know, we were able to get some funding and finish it. And we were, you know, able to with some of our contact. You know, with another really funny thing is where my personal life intersects with work, is that one of the musicians, Pete Rodriguez, who we talked about, who, you know, was his band Did I Like It Like That, which is sort of like the defining, one of the defining songs of the Boogaloo era. Pete Rodriguez had just dropped off after the Boogaloo era. No one had heard of him for like decades and decades. But I found out that my aunt, my uncle's wife, her cousin was married to Pete Rodriguez. So so my cousin...
Only in New York.
So when I found this out, my cousin's like, well, you know, I send them a Christmas card every year. Here's their address. Try it. So I remember, actually, I had even tried, I think, to get him from Mambo to Hip Hop, and I didn't hear anything back. So I was like, okay, nothing. But then, so I was like, let me try again. And luckily, his wife, Nikki, everyone knew her as Nikki, she was like, he was really shy. Pete was really shy, so that's why he never got back to me. But she wasn't. So she finally called me and said, you know what? You come here and interview him. And we interviewed him. And when people saw him in the film, they were like, oh, my God, I haven't seen him in like 40 years. And one of the screenings we did early on, we had Benny Bonilla, who I said was a timbales player. He was in the screening, and we didn't tell him that Pete was coming. And they saw each other at the screening, and they just, like, ran to each other, like, you know, in the audience because they hadn't seen each other in, like, years and years and years. So it was really – that was really nice. He got a little bit more of fame again. People were calling me to try to interview him when Cardi B came out with her version. You know, the music keeps coming back.
It does. I mean, and that film ends with this wonderful concert that the musicians give, which is, you know, the park is packed and, you know, it's really a triumphant moment. I was so moved in that part of the documentary where Joe Batan was talking about being a kid and breaking into the church just so he could go into the basement to play the piano that was there. Oh, my God. I mean... I just found that so moving that, you know, he had the music in him so much that he would break into the church and go to the church basement to play. And then the piano was still there, which was so cool.
That was just, a couple things. First of all, Joe Batan is like a folklorist, interviewer's dream. He's a great storyteller. You know, you've probably interviewed people who are just like, yes, no. He's like, has stories, you know? So he's always a great interview. He's fun. Tells great stories. And then when Matthew took him out that day, you know, they were just walking around East Harlem just to like point out, you know, oh, there's my, you know, the first place I played. There's where I grew up, just to like, you know, get a sense of the neighborhood. And that was that really was totally not planned. You know, they just happened to walk by the church. Yeah, that's that, you know, that's where I played piano. And the priest was like, okay, let's get in there and see if it's still there. And it was. It was a really serendipitous, I guess, you know, moment, you know, in filming.
Tell me a little bit more about the work you do at the Bronx Music Heritage Center. What are the programs that you present there?
So the Bronx Music Heritage Center, our mission is to provide a stage, a platform for all things Bronx, all things that are musically part of the Bronx. You know, the Bronx is known for two things, especially it's the birth of hip hop. It's also called the Borough of Salsa, El Condado de la Salsa, the Borough of Salsa. So people think of that music, and we present those forms of music, but it's such an incredible place. It's an immigrant neighborhood. There's so many different groups that move in and contribute to their communities are growing. One of the largest Ghanaian communities from Africa is in the Bronx. There's a growing Gambian community. There's a large Bengali community. One of the largest Garifuna communities outside of Central America have their home in the Bronx. So there's so much amazing music and musicians and artists to work with. And so we, you know, our thing is to present programs. But for me, I come out of folklore. The other artistic director is a jazz musician. So that kind of informs a lot of the work that we do. So jazz and folk and traditional music, you know, the Bronx also has an incredible jazz history. There's 6 NEA jazz masters right from the neighborhood where I work. A great history, and there was an area of a lot of jazz clubs. So that music has a history there. But in terms of like Latin music, Afro-Cuban music rhythms have really been the basis for a lot of what people are familiar with Latin jazz and Latin music. But that's changing. You know, there's now young musicians from all over Latin America that are adding their traditional rhythms to jazz. Not what Machito and them did in the Mambo era, add Cuban rhythms to big band jazz. Now you have a lot of musicians from all over Latin America adding their own rhythms, you know, whether it's joropo from South America or, you know, cumbia from Colombia and Mexico. They're adding those rhythms to jazz, infusing and creating new things. So that's been like an interesting thing, taking how jazz has been sort of like a good platform for traditional musical forms from different places, and people are using that and, you know, making these new fusions. So that's part of the work that we show and present as well. It's really important for us. The traditional music and with the jazz element is really important for us to present, because I just think the traditional music is still so much represents sort of the heart of communities. You know, there's so many groups that are like Garifuna from Honduras and Belize and Nicaragua. They use traditional musical forms all the time to sort of like help people learn the language, to make sure their language, you know, stays viable. And so it's very important for them to use traditional forms. And that's why, you know, I'm so glad to have City Lore still our partner, you know, in this, that folklore is still really central to that work, even though it doesn't have to be. It's not my main emphasis. We're not a folklore organization, but we're always going to keep the work with grassroots artists, you know, traditional music as sort of like central to the mission. I want to showcase the stuff that you're not going to see on the radio that, you know, that's really a thriving part of the community, but not on the radio.
How did you program during the pandemic?
We had to go virtual like so many people did, but, you know, we had a learning curve. Some things were better than more well done than others. People learned really early that playing music over Zoom doesn't work because of that delay.
Yeah.
So that was like out. But what we did, we started doing, having artists we work with make videos in their home. That was one issue we had to worry about, you know, like making sure wanting to get artists out there to give them a place to, you know, perform, do something, but, you know, having to, you know, deal with the technical issues. But we started doing, which worked out a little bit better, we started these series called Percussion Discussion, because Bobby's a drummer. We, you know, did workshops. People would maybe do mini workshops, you know, how to play the cha-cha-cha rhythms on timbales, or, you know, how to create maracas, you know, that you use in bomba music, whatever, different workshops. But then we started doing a lot of interviews. And the interviews have just been nice because it's so much easier when you're just interviewing someone, you know, less technical things to worry about. But what we do is always try to make somehow have an interactive process. Actually, I've done a lot of Latin music musicians recently, like Eddie Palmieri, Oscar Hernandez. We just interviewed Ronnie Puente, Tito Puente's eldest son. And so in these interviews, we open it. Like we take live questions. People ask their questions on Facebook and we can have people, the musician, answer them right there. And they're really, we get a lot of responses. Like during the event, you just get like dozens and dozens of people commenting and asking questions. To me, that's important. We have to figure out some sort of way to like engage and with each other.
And that makes perfect sense. Are you beginning to do live performances again?
Oh, yes. And then, you know, the first, we started a couple, like, just have the band inside our venue last summer, just a couple times. We just had, like, just a live stream, no audience, just the band. And it was really wonderful. Like, musicians were like, oh, my God, it was so nice to be around other musicians, like, to not have to do those, like, things where everyone's, like, videotaping themselves and someone mixes all the stuff together, you know. But then this last spring, our new space, where we're on the Bronx Music Hall, we're waiting to finish the indoor theater, but it has an outdoor plaza, a really nice outdoor plaza. So we've been able to do outdoor programming since the spring. And that's been really nice. We actually give a shout out to the NEA, funded us for this great program. Interestingly enough, this was before the pandemic, we got some funding to do a series about traditional forms of music that people wear masks, you know, for different celebrations.
Oh, my God.
So we were, like, you know, looking at, like, the Vejigante mask, like, from Puerto Rico, and then the Guanagra dance they do, that they wear these beautiful big netted masks in the Garifuna. So we had this, like, series of the mask ceremonies and mask traditions that we put together for these programs. And it came out, you know, we were using that funding during the pandemic. So we talked a little bit about the importance of masks in many different settings now. The masks have taken on this whole new relevance. So we were able to do like a bunch of them in the outdoor plaza, which was really nice, and some of our other programming as well. Like I said, it's nice for us as staff to get to work with people again. The musicians love working with other people. And even the first couple times we were out in the plaza, the audience was like, it's so nice to be around people. Like, it's so nice to be around other people again. So I think, you know, little by little, people are, you know, coming out, and I think really enjoying that music, being with other people.
And I think that's a good place to leave it. Elena, thank you so much. Thank you for giving me your time. Thank you for making these wonderful films and for all the work you do for my beloved New York.
Thank you, Joe. This was really great. Thank you so much for asking me.
Not at all. I really enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you. That was Elena Martinez. She is folklorist at City Lore and also currently the co-artistic director of the Bronx Music Heritage Center. She's the co-producer of From Mambo to Hip Hop and the producer of We Like It Like That. You can watch From Mambo to Hip Hop for free at folkstreams.net. You can get information about how you can watch We Like It Like That at latinboogaloo.com. You can check out the work of City Lore at citylore.org. or the Bronx Music Heritage Center at thisisbronxmusic.org. I'll also include these links in the show notes. You've been listening to Artworks, produced at the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Josephine Reed. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.